it starts with just an open-mindedness from people that things are changing. It's a lot of fun to be a part of something that's being invested in. A lot of people enjoy the creativity, experimentation, and really just being curious, changing that mindset to asking questions, to really learn about the business, to be able to build things that are relevant and impactful to where the business is trying to go.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand Live Show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand Live Show. Welcome back, my wonderful audience. You guys are amazing. Every single week, you guys come back, you share, you email me, you talk to me on LinkedIn, you tell me what you like, what you don't like. I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you for being part of this show. Thank you for making this a five-year phenomena. And I couldn't do this show without you. Now, this week, we're going to go in a little different direction. I was introduced to our guest by a buddy of mine, Raul Ochoa, and he sent me her website. And I looked at the front page and I said, you know what? I have got to have this person on the show. On the front page of her website, it says, HR sucks, but it doesn't have to. And I knew right then and there, I needed to have Anissa Deshpande on the show. Welcome to the show, Anissa. I'm so excited to have you here. I love that comment on your homepage. HR sucks, but it doesn't have to.
Well, thanks, Ben, for having me. Yeah, it was interesting because I had a marketing firm help me with coming up with the website, the brand, the message. And I read the book Story Brand by Donald Miller. And he had an example of something that was really edgy. Like, we paint SH bleep T for a painting company. And I'm like, wow, that really resonates with me, that edginess. And so I told the firm, I'm like, I really like this type of edginess. And we were talking about HR. We were going through the whole, they have like this 7-step process that's associated with Story Brand, where you identify various parts of the story, very much like a screenplay. And what the message that kept coming out is the pain point was everyone felt like HR sucked. And so one of them was bold enough to just say, why don't we make your tagline HR sucks, but it doesn't have to. And it took me a long time to be like, am I okay with that? Is that the right way to talk about it? But it really is a conversation piece. It gets people's attention. And I think it resonates with people because I get calls from friends and relatives all the time that are asking me questions about HR or raising an HR issue to me. And I'm like, you know, you need to go talk to your internal HR person. I'm like, do I have to? I really don't want to. And so this is a very common feeling that I get from people that I wanted to capture and let people know there's a different way to it, to approach HR.
Well, it sets you apart. I mean, I'm a big believer in brand. Anybody who knows me knows I'm a brand guy. I love Story Brand. I love that book.
Yeah.
And for me, it's okay. If you're going to make a statement, make a statement. If you're going to have a brand, have a brand. Be different, be unique, stand on your own and sit there. Okay, listen, this is what I believe in. And I'm going to own this. And yeah, if you're going to make that on your homepage, you got to own this. Yeah. And I love it because it's a conversation starter, whether it's somebody who's just starting out in HR or a CEO. Look, there's an issue. We've got an issue. HR over the years has not lived up to its brand promise, but it doesn't have to.
Right.
And it allows you to go in and have that conversation about change. And I think that that's a powerful conversation that needs to happen because, as we said off air, we're not 2019 anymore. We're not the year 2000 anymore. This is 2022 and beyond. And the world has changed. We've had that black swan moment. People have changed. People's attitudes about work have changed. People's desire and what they're willing to put up with has changed. And we need to be able to respond to that within the organization. So, Anissa, let's start off and really talk about who you are. Let's get into where you came from, because you came from big corporate America. and did some incredible things. So let's get into that. And then let's get into where HR is today and where is it going.
So my story is that I have over 25 years of experience in HR, IT, finance, and strategy. And as you mentioned, I worked for corporate environments for 20 years. My last role before starting my own firm was that I was the head of global talent at a Fortune 500 called AECOM. And so I was responsible, my team was responsible for hiring 20,000 people annually in 150 countries. And so I was leading the hiring for the entire company. And then I was also working on internal talent initiatives that really impacted the business. So things like performance management, succession planning, but we were trying to move away from what I'll call a compliance mindset or a mindset of checking the box to how do we make these activities into value-added activities for the business? How do these activities drive the business closer to its business goals? And so I was loving that work, but had been doing kind of in executive roles for over 10 years and was yearning for something different. And I think really what I was feeling like was I could have a bigger impact if I could touch more companies. It was great doing this for one company, but what if I could do this for a variety of companies and not have to just look at one set of business challenges? And so I decided in 2015 to launch my own company. We are a modern HR advisory services firm. We have a couple of service offerings. We are moving more into what I'll call the coaching, HR coaching, modern HR coaching and advising. So a lot of time with CEOs, with HR leaders, helping them broaden their mindset because it has to happen on both sides. A lot of times CEOs tell you that they want modern HR, but they're not operating in a way where they're encouraging and enabling modern HR. So there's a little bit of that, but then there's also coaching HR leaders to think bigger, to help them focus on working on the business goals as a starting point and then aligning the people programs to that. So we do a lot of coaching. We also do some fractional chief people officer services, primarily to investor-backed companies. And that's where they have a VP of HR or a strong HR manager, but they don't have that real partner to the CEO. And so I'll step in and play that role as needed. And then, and we'll probably talk about this, we also do content. So I recently wrote a book. We've got some online video courses, really trying to add to and I think impact and broaden the HR thought leadership, which still tends to focus a lot on compliance type things. And I think needs to move more towards really how do we impact the business in a meaningful way. So those are the three service areas. I launched my own business in 2015. As you know, running your own business has its ups and downs.
Never boring.
Never boring. In 2018, we rebranded with the website. So Logue Lab is actually, Logue means people in Hindi. And we've been called Logue Lab since 2015. But in 2018, we really worked on our messaging and our brand. And that's when we came up with the whole HR Sucks, but it doesn't have to. And here I am today.
That's cool. You know, we're talking about the winds of change. And in case anybody's listening in the background, they hear a little bit of banging. Anissa's down where you're down in the Santa Ana's and the wind is just going absolutely crazy. So if you hear any banging in the background, it's not construction going on. It's the Santa Ana's going crazy. So
it's a crazy windy day. I live in Pasadena and it actually just got really windy probably 15 minutes before we started this. But like I have this covered patio that has curtains and they're like all blowing everywhere and everything on the patio is blowing. So apologize if you guys hear that in the background.
Well, as long as we don't hear crashing of glass coming through the door, we're okay. So just to give people an idea, if they hear a little bit of banging in the background, what's going on? Before we get into all that, I just want to go back to the fact of 20,000 new employees on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
I would say that 99.9% of people haven't got a clue the challenges and the logistics and the thought process and the strategy that needs to go into recruiting, interviewing, onboarding, bringing people into the culture, 20,000 people on a yearly basis. What did you learn from that in terms of process, in terms of procedures, in terms of being able to do that on a massive scale that really help differentiate you as you move forward?
Yeah, so we were a professional services company. And early on when I got the job, I really started to think about the function as the supply chain of the business. Because if you didn't have the people that you needed to service your clients, then you were losing revenue, you were impacting client satisfaction, right? So I really started to take the function of recruiting and think of it as this essential service to the business. And I started to talk about it that way with the leaders so that they could change their mindset around it. So even at a company where everything was dependent on recruiting and development, talent development for the company to be successful, a lot of the leaders still had very, what I'll call, outdated thinking around recruiting. They didn't understand what they needed to do. They were not equipped to have strong interviews to really assess a candidate and ask the questions of what needed to get done, whether this would be the right person to help things get done. And so I think what I learned during that time was the way that you frame your function, and if you can connect it to what the company is trying to achieve, versus talking about it within the jargon of recruitment, right? So like putting your metrics in the context of business metrics. So not looking at a metric like time to fill, which may be how you manage your department, but looking at the inability to fill a requisition and its impacts on revenue and customer delivery. So really taking that approach and connecting these, what is sometimes considered a back office function, to the business enabled it to be viewed as a strategic function within the company. And the other thing I learned as part of that is when you start having conversations about what you do in that context, and people start to understand how important it is, you start to get more funding for what it is you need to do. We were able to move out of what I'll call that cost center mindset, where it was like, can we cut, can we cut, can we cut, can we cut, to what do you need to be successful? When people started to make that connection, we saw that trickle down to other areas of HR. And if people could continue to have those conversations, could take their function and connect it to what the business was trying to do and align it to what the business was trying to do and show the impacts of what they were doing to business results, we found that they were able to get investment. That was a really big lesson for me because it helped us move HR. It taught me that HR doesn't necessarily need to have this cost center mindset.
And I think that's a huge thing because a lot of organizations, and I deal with organizations across North America, the one conversation I get with people is, oh, that's too expensive. Oh, we could never afford that. Oh, we don't have the budget for that. And it's the mentality of HR sees itself as a cost center. They see themselves as constantly going with hat in hand, looking for nickels and dimes, where they should be sitting there going, okay, if we can show that there's a business case for this, if we can show that there's return on investment, if we can sit there and say, look, if we spend $1 million, we're going to make you $8 million. If you can do that, the company will give you $1 million all day, every day, and twice on Sunday, if they know they're going to get an 8X return on their investment. But how do we teach the HR professionals that don't, a lot of them don't have that business acumen. They don't have that language of business. They don't understand what drives business and even how to ask the right questions to be in that business mentality. So therefore, they can put themselves in a position and say, look, we want to help you help this company succeed, but we need the language to be able to understand how we can be able to help achieve that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. I think there's a couple of things that happened. The first is a lot of people have been raised, have had these HR careers where they've been totally focused on compliance, right? And if you start your career early in HR, and I did not, right? I entered HR much later in my career after I'd had more business exposure. So it was possible for me to have come in with a different mindset. But if you start in that in more of a traditional environment, that's the way you're raised to think that, like, my job is to make sure that the company doesn't get sued, to be the police, to make sure employees are doing what they should be doing, versus I'm here to enable the business. First of all, you have to paint the picture of what modern HR looks like. And I think I even have a video out there on modern versus traditional HR. And once you start to move to that modern HR world by asking questions, by trying to learn the business, by not coming in with an HR point of view, but being open to where the business is going, and then thinking about how would that impact HR, that's how you can start to develop those skill sets. But once you do that, you do find that the view of HR as a cost center goes away. And I even say, like, if you're in this position where your CEO is coming to you every year, or your CFO is coming to you every year and asking for a 10% reduction year over year, you are a cost center. But if you can align your work to what you're doing and how it's going to help the business and enable it and help it grow, then to your point, you're going to get more of that investment. And very easy ways to start to show your impact is, first of all, to look at turnover, right? Turnover is just profit walking out the door, profit and institutional knowledge walking out the door. And a lot of HR departments and companies accept it as a way of doing business, but you don't have to. You have to think about different ways that you can reduce turnover. And if you can reduce turnover or even make a minimal impact, you save the company a ton of money. And most companies are willing to invest even in a pilot to test it to see if it will work. And that's a great way to make a business case.
Well, it's a matter of looking at things innovatively and differently. I mean, we're working on a test case right now for a company. We're talking to them. They're a 58,000 employee company. And they've got 8,000 new employees. They've just merged. It's a merger and acquisition. They're bringing 8,000 new employees in from another organization. Well, traditionally, to onboard those 8,000 people, what, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 of employees, somewhere in that range? So we're talking the millions of dollars. But what if you could do it as an ongoing podcast and be able to have those conversations and build that culture and those relationships and get people to understand from various points of view how to be able to not only understand the culture, but the mission, the vision, the values, and how things are done within the company on an ongoing basis, you're able to bring those people in more effectively, more cost effectively, and be able to do this at a small percentage of what it would cost to do it traditionally. It's having organizations be open and having the HR departments be open to look at different ways and different thought processes where you said they've always been the don't get sued police.
Right.
And I know many organizations where a lot of employees don't realize that the chief role of HR is not the employee advocate. It's to make sure that the company doesn't get sued. And when we look at the role of HR and how it's morphing and how it's changing and the value that it can add, how do we, and you as an organization, promote that within the organization to enable the industry to change from the ground up? Because it's not just one person has to think this way. The industry has to think this way. HR as an industry and as an association and a thought process needs to change to be able to be seen as valuable and not as the cost center and as a driver of business objectives.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the pandemic has really helped to illustrate that point, that HR needs to think differently, that we need HR as a guide to help us navigate uncertain times, to be innovative about workforce models, to test different things. And I think there are a ton of opportunities right now for HR. So I don't know how to answer the question of how do we get the industry to change, because I think that's the lifelong thing that I will be working on, right? To get the industry to change. And I think there's a lot more curiosity than there was 5 years ago. There's a lot more openness. And I think what we're dealing with right now is very standard change management issues where there's a fear of uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think it's up to leadership teams to enable that modern HR, to take a chance and to invest in something that may or may not pan out those first few times that you try it. And it's just like innovation. You have to experiment a little bit to see what's going to work and what's not. But that's an uncomfortable space for HR. And I think there's also a lot of, you know, like I preach a lot of data analytics and technology in the use of HR. You and I were just chatting about this before we recorded. There's so many opportunities, but those aren't places where HR people traditionally feel like that's their strength. And so, you know, there's always this uncertainty about data, this uncomfortableness. And then you're trying to apply data to one of the most unpredictable things in the world, which is how people behave and react, right?
The X factor, human beings.
The X factor is human beings. And so it's understanding that there's patterns that can help you make decisions, but you've got to balance that with your intuition. We're not saying just look at the data and make a decision, but we're saying bring more of that data into your discussions and your decision-making to inform what the decision should be. And I think it starts with just an open-mindedness from people that things are changing. It's a lot of fun to be a part of something that's being invested in. And a lot of people enjoy the creativity, experimentation, and really just being curious, changing that mindset to asking questions, to really learn about the business, to be able to build things that are relevant and impactful to where the business is trying to go. Once you've had a couple of successes with that, where you've seen, okay, we did this performance management system and we were able to now connect it to our business results and connect it to all of these great things. And it's led to a better performance the following year because we had productive discussions. When you start to see those successes, I think you start to enjoy modern HR much more because it's more interesting to work on and there's bigger results and rewards that you see from it.
So what do you think the role of curiosity is?
Oh, it's huge. And I think the role of curiosity in business is huge, not just with HR. I think in my book, Meg, the coach, often has a saying of be curious, not furious. And it's a saying that I learned from somebody many years ago. And I think if you can approach things from curiosity and a growth mindset, and I want to learn, I'm here to get it right, not to be right, it's definitely going to change the way that you're viewed in the business. Some people think it shows a lack of confidence if you don't come in there and say that this is the way it is. I actually think it shows confidence when you say, here's what I'm thinking. I'm pretty confident, but tell me what I may be missing. Help me fill in the blanks to create a full picture because I have this perspective, but it may be missing these blind spots. You have this other perspective. Together, when we connect this, this is going to be a well-rounded view of what's happening.
Hi, everyone. Do you want to be your best customer's vendor of choice? Do you want to cement relationships with them, add real value, and gain insights that your competitors just can't get? Go to podcasthostforhire.com. That's podcasthostforhire.com. And let's work together to make you the value vendor of choice. The larger the organization that we deal with, the bigger the silos I see. Mm-hmm. We see siloization with every organization and the good, the bad, and the ugly that goes along with it. How do you think HR can help disassemble those silos by building better alliances with different departments and creating better understanding, not only of what HR objectives are, but having HR have a better understanding of the objectives of the other parts of the company and building in programs that benefit everybody together?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's up to HR to be extraordinarily curious about what's happening across all areas of the business. And then HR needs to develop some really strong partnerships. And this is one of the first things, like if you're working in a traditional HR world and you're not sure how to take those first few steps to move to modern HR, one of my first suggestions is partner up with your finance team. Because your finance team, first of all, every finance team that I've met over the last 5 years really wants to see HR succeed and is willing to put the time in to help you build those business cases. Again, you're not expected to have all the answers. We all have strengths and we all have weaknesses. And when you're building a business case in HR, one of my first suggestions is always to involve your finance team because they're going to help you think about things in a way that you may not be accustomed to. They also know the way that executives are looking at finances, looking at business cases, and they can give you insight as to the best way to prepare this so that the executives can consume it. But to answer your question, I mean, I think HR has to be extraordinarily curious about what's happening outside of HR, whether it's finance, IT, business, operations, sales, et cetera, and really learn and really try to make sure their objectives are addressing some of the larger trends that they're seeing across the organization. They need to promote collaboration by demonstrating collaboration across the various areas of the business. It's not a simple fix, right? Like silos are difficult, and it could be that we need to redesign the organization. We need to take a look at some organizational metrics to see how are we structured? Do we have too many layers in the organization? Do we not have the right span of control among managers? These are all things, data points that we can look at. For example, we have a ton of layers in the organization, a lot of people that are managing one person that are creating more levels, more silos, that communication and a longer communication string, if you will. How can we reduce those and really try to streamline some of the communications, make it easier to get ideas up and down the chain? So there's a lot of things that HR can do, but they're not used to thinking that way, to looking at both the macro level of what's happening across the organization, but also the micro level of what are my peers struggling with from the other departments and how can we all work together to build something effective here.
So we talked off air about the term business partners, and it seems like a really good time to bring that up, because are you truly a business partner or are you an integral part that's driving the success of the corporation?
It's the latter. You are an integral part of what's driving the success of the corporation. A partner to me, I mean, it's not that you're not a business partner, but I think you need to be more than that. I think you need to see yourself as an enabler of the business. What people actions, what people programs do we need to put in place to make sure we can achieve our goals? And how do we get ahead of that?
Yeah, because I look at it and go, okay, a business partner to me is almost a hands-off. It's almost like a consultant. That's my view of a business partner is I'm a business partner because I'm a consultant. You bring me in. I charge you tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. I write up a report. We find a problem. We fix the problem. And then I go away. I see HR as you guys are the ones that stick around. And yeah. You're there day after day and month after month and year after year. So I don't see you as a partner. I see you as an integral part of the day-to-day success and being seen from the C-suite level as a partner almost puts you as almost hands-off or almost apart. To me, it's a language thing. More than anything else, it's a language thing and that words matter. I'm a big believer that words do matter. And words drive perception. So I want to sit there and dive into that and sit there and say, when we use the word business partner, are we putting ourselves in a position where we're not assuming our own place at the table?
So the term business partner has been around for a while. And I think it was the first step to moving HR out of that traditional mindset and getting people to focus on the business. So I think this is an evolution. And I think that was like level one. And now we need to ask ourselves, well, what's the next level? Because prior to having business partners, that relationship of an HR person to a business leader, someone the business leader could talk to and get some guidance and advice from, that was missing across many of the companies. And so I think that's why we came up with the term business partner as a starting point to just get people to think more about the business. And now I think we need to move further into that business enabler role, I should say, where we're really thinking about ways where we can move the needle when it comes to the business by focusing on the people dimension of the business. A business leader that runs a region, for example, they have a number of things that they focus on from a sales and operations, a finance, a delivery perspective. And they need somebody who's constantly helping them align people around the objectives of the business and enabling the business. And that's the role to me of the business enabler in HR, to really be that person that is with them every step of the way, giving them like, hey, here's a blind spot that you have when you're thinking about the people dimension, or here's the implications of what's going to happen if we make this decision on the people, or here's something you're not even thinking about that I'm seeing a trend of, we need to get together and think about how we fix this. So HR needs to be that collaborator that we talked about, that's looking across all these areas of the business with their people hat on and looking for blind spots, trends, anything and everything that can impact the business and stop it from achieving its goals from the people perspective.
So how can leaders within HR enable their teams to be better, to be able to drive that mentality shift, to take them out of their comfort zone and take them away from their traditional HR viewpoints and bring them into this new level of HR and to give them the confidence to be able to be a true partner at the table?
Yeah, it takes time. And I think the first thing is providing the context of the business. So back to that early example that I talked to you about in recruiting earlier in my career, where I realized that we were talking about recruiting the wrong way, where we were looking at recruiting as filling a requisition versus we are the supply chain of the business. We are an integral part of the business. So it's setting that context in a lot of ways of here's where the business is going, and this is what we as HR have to do to be able to support the business. And the first time you do this, like if you lay out an HR strategy that does this, it scares people. Like it's too big. That's not what we're here to do. Or the other thing where HR leaders even get stuck is we talk about success metrics for the strategy, and I make the first set of success metrics the business metrics, right? Like the business has a goal to grow revenue, and we don't grow revenue, you can't say that HR was successful. And HR people, a lot of the leaders, they don't do it as much anymore, but they used to push back on me quite a bit on that I really am not able to drive revenue. So why should I be held accountable to it? And I asked them to look at a baseball team, right? And so if the pitching was perfect, but you lost the game, is that a win? Is that a success? And they're like, well, of course not. So if the business doesn't achieve its goals, there's no way the HR team can claim victory. The HR strategy missed something that prevented the business from achieving its goals, as did the finance strategy, the IT strategy, like all of these. It's not just one group, but you've got to have that skin in the game. You've got to be able to help your team with the context, setting the context of what they're doing and connecting it to what the business is trying to do. And the other thing we have people do a lot is, as they're doing their day-to-day work, have them ask themselves, is this going to move the needle in terms of the goals we talked about? Or is this just something I'm doing because I need to check a box? And we give them that litmus test, and they're able a lot of times to figure out, yeah, this isn't where I need to be spending my time. I can automate this. I can outsource this. I can send this to somebody else. I should be focused over here.
And that's where people need to take a look at technology and say, technology is not a crutch. It needs to be an enabler. It needs to be, say, okay, let's get rid of the repetitive stuff, the stuff that can actually be done through technology and enable us to do the things that we're really meant to do.
Yeah, it is technology, but it's also the highest and best use of your time.
Absolutely.
And a lot of times, especially when I'm coaching, the CEO will come up with some project and say, we need to fix our compensation. And HR will drop everything and try to fix the compensation. Well, they may not have the skill sets to really do that, right? That I agree. Compensation, you know, the HR leader needs to be empowered to say, I agree. Compensation is a very important thing. We need to fix it. But there's a provider that can do this for us that's going to be much more cost effective. So like I tell HR leaders all the time, it's your job to figure out how to get things done and not feel like you have to do everything yourself or within the team that you have.
That's huge. It's, as you said, it's the best use of your time and the best use of your budget to be able to drive objectives. So I have a couple of questions. I'm going to let you go. The first one that comes to mind is, so where would we go from here? Where do HR go to be able to enable companies to succeed in this new complexity? Because we're going into the unknown and the void and the abyss again. So how does HR work side by side with finance, with legal, with the C-suite, with operations, with sales, with marketing, to be able to be that person that can help take away the scary and be able to help drive overall objectives?
Yeah, so I think it's a good question. And I think this is a time for HR to be bold. I think there's so many headwinds in the talent market, and there's potentially a workforce that is deciding whether they want to work for companies or not. And some of them are making a decision that that's not where I see myself. So, I mean, this may be a little too bold, but I think in some cases, we need to be thinking about alternative employment models, because I think we're going to have a skill shortage for a very long time. I think there are so many trends that we can learn and experiment with. So, for example, I use this one a lot. Uber has a completely self-managing workforce with its drivers. Mm-hmm. There's a wealth of information that we can be learning from Uber and how it's able to service its customers with technology, but also with the self-managing workforce. Like, what can we learn from that? And what can we take and apply to our own businesses? Is the W-2 model, where you are working for a company, is that going to be the dominant model going forward? Or is there going to be some other picture that comes up, something new that we haven't thought of yet? And I think there's a greater separation that's happening between where you work and where you live. And this really came to light during the pandemic. For the last almost 3 years now, there's been a total separation of where you live and where you work. And so now to say, no, we're going to go back to the way it was seems outdated. But then also to say, well, we're going to demand that people are in the office 3 days a week. We need to be thinking about the why. What is it that we're trying to do? And I think a lot of the discussion around where work gets done is flawed, because the way work gets done has been a challenge for many, many years. Like if you think about a middle manager or a leader in a corporate job, they spend 60 to 70% of their time in meetings, back-to-back meetings. I mean, how many people do you talk to that are like, oh my God, I was back-to-back then, right? How are you getting work done if you're back-to-back in meetings? I believe that there are different ways of getting work done that we haven't addressed yet. And even like when the pandemic happened, we tried to take our days in the office and put them on Zoom. And what did we learn? That we all got Zoom fatigue after 8 hours of being on video calls. Well, it also wasn't super productive in the office. You were just able to hide it because you were in the office 8 hours, things were getting done, but it still wasn't the optimal way to do things. And so I think there's so much opportunity to explore here and figure out what the future of work looks like. And that's really what HR's role is at every company and as an industry.
I think it's being brave enough to ask why not, and what if.
Exactly.
And I think that if we can start asking those questions, I think we're going to come up with some better models, or at least some different models. And we're going to try them, and we're going to succeed sometimes and fail others. And we're going to learn from everything, and we're going to move forward. But I think that business today needs to stop saying, well, we've always done it this way. And we need to look and say, okay, if we change this, how is this going to enable us to do things that we couldn't do today?
That's right. And I think that the workforce innovations have not really happened. The way that we work, other than like now we use computers more than we did in the past. But if I go back to how my dad started working in like 1967 or 68, and when I started working in 95, there was very little difference, right? We drove to the office every day. We sat at our desk for 8 hours. Maybe he had a typewriter and I had a computer, right?
Still had a keyboard though.
Still had a keyboard, and we attended a few meetings. Like, that fundamentally hasn't shifted. It's almost like, and I talk about this like with education as well. I have a niece who is graduating high school, and I remember her junior year, I asked her what courses she was taking, and they were exactly the same courses I took 30 years ago as a junior in high school. And it's like, I'm hoping the textbooks are more updated, but like, we just haven't done a lot of innovation in these spaces, and we haven't had to because they've worked. But now I think we have to. And I think people have learned so much over the last 3 years. We need to use this as a time to reinvent and not to think about going back.
Well, I think it's time to be bold. And I think if we're going to take one thing out of this conversation, it's time to be bold and it's time to be innovative.
That's right.
And Lisa, so your book is called The Comeback.
Yes.
And I just want to give it a quick shout out. I'll make sure that I have a link to it within the show notes. And I also, you had that video, and I want to make sure that we get a link to that video. So if you send me a link to that video, I'll make sure we put that in the show notes as well, so people can see that. Because I think that that would be a really interesting thing for people to know. The website is theloglab.net.
Yes.
Perfect. And we'll make sure we get that as well. But I have one question I want to ask you before I let you out the door. And this is what I ask everybody. When you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
It's one thing, or can it be two things?
It's your time. You can have two.
So first, I want them to think that, first of all, that meeting was of value, that my contribution was of value, and they learned something. And I want to walk away learning something as well. And second, I want them to see me as someone who comes to the table with a creative way of solving a problem, and that it either brings them some comfort or relieves them a little bit, or excites them and energizes them to pursue a new way of thinking. So those are probably the two things that I would like people to leave after an interaction with me.
Well, it's a brave new world, and I think we need to think creatively, be resilient, and look at things differently. And I'm excited about it. So thank you for being such a phenomenal guest. Thanks to Raul Ochoa for introducing us.
Yes.
And thank you for being such a wonderful, insightful person to my audience.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you having me on your show.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live. And share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?